Welcome to Synthaholics, your weekly shot of Star Trek. This is your host, David Duncan. And with me this week, we've got Aaron O'Brien.
Hello.
Holly Michelle.
Hi.
And we got Guy Davis. It's been a long time since he's been here. Really long time, but he used to be pretty regular. Welcome,
yeah,
Guy.
Yeah, hello. Hello.
Now he's eating the Raisin Bran. The brand is back. He's regular again.
Woo!
I know. Totally. It was really miserable for a while there.
About a year of not being regular. That sucks.
Well, welcome back, sir. Welcome back. We're so good to have you back.
I'm glad to be here. Thank you very much.
If people don't know, if they haven't heard you from past episodes, so you are on Rocky Mountain Geek Tank podcast, and you guys do a ton of, how can I say, you do like geek culture, but you also do a lot of stuff that's happening in your city there in Denver.
Yeah, we're a geek culture podcast. We sort of navel gaze. We sort of look at our own culture, sort of look at ourselves. But yeah, we go to conventions and cover the conventions and talk about how we interact with each other and, you know, cool things like that. But we also kind of look outside, like we do talk about Star Trek and we talk about, you know, Doctor Who and all the geeky stuff like normal.
Right. Yeah, and you guys do you do a live broadcast on Facebook Tuesday nights, which is, you said, 8 o'clock Mountain Time.
Yep.
Correct?
Mountain Time. Yep. 8 right. o'clock Mountain Time. So we broadcast live out of Denver, Colorado. So you can catch us live on Facebook at 8 o'clock. We're at Rocky Mountain Geek Tank. You can just type that into Facebook and you can find us. You can also find us there at RockyMountainGeekTank.com.
Nice. And also, if you don't know, Guy is an artist, and he's been producing comics for a very long time. And one of the very first episodes we had him was because he did he works on a comic, web comic called the USS Tamberlin, which is takes place in the original series. And it takes place on a destroyer class, single nacelle destroyer.
Yep. Yeah, and actually, I've moved all of those, or I'm starting to move all of those over to my personal website, which you can find at gsdavisart.com.
Nice. Awesome.
But you can also find that at usstamberlin.com.
Cool. Very cool. Cool. Well, so good to have you back and hear your voice again, and we can talk about Star Trek.
Star Trek Discovery.
Some discovery. Say,
that's what we're here for, right? We're here to talk about.
That is true. Although, before we got started, Aaron said there's some news this week, and I didn't even see this. Apparently, I've had my head in the sand. I have been crocheting a lot at work, though.
Okay, well, good. I expect a sweater soon. Just joking. I don't need a sweater.
I got shaved. My head's all bald now. I need something to warm my head.
Did you?
I lost almost all my hair.
How'd you do that? You did. I didn't see any pictures of this.
I tripped in a wood chipper.
It looks nice.
I haven't seen this picture yet, but okay. That's the old Dave Duncan. I haven't seen you.
I'm ashamed. I'm ashamed of the new Dave Duncan.
Oh, don't be sorry.
I liked my old hair, but I'm trying to get another job, so I'm trying to look presentable, I suppose.
You know, you gotta do that sometimes.
Well, if it helps, I saw a picture and you look very handsome.
Oh, thank you.
See? There you go. Don't feel bad. Just.
Yeah. Kaylee sent a picture. I think she sent the pictures to my mom too, because I haven't been proud of it to share anybody.
Oh, no.
I know you were rocking the long hair forever, so.
Yeah.
That's gotta be brutal.
Yeah. It's a hard one. Well.
No, it really does look nice. I promise.
Well, thank you.
Well, let's get on to this little news other than Dave's new haircut.
Good thing this is an audio medium, right?
He got the Picard. Give me the Picard.
Yeah, it's like, give me the Picard.
So we did get information on Star Trek's new series, Picard, and its character breakdowns. So first of all, we got the director for, I believe, the first and maybe the second, but I didn't really say. It wasn't very clear, which is her name is Hanley Culpepper.
I think it's Hanel.
Hanel? Oh, thank you. Yeah.
Because she was a Discovery director.
She did, yeah. She did do Vaulting Ambitions, and what else did she do? And The Red Angel.
Yeah.
So she did those. So yeah, so she's moving over. She's got a lot of directing under her belt. So she's been directing a lot of TV.
Yeah.
So, we got her as the director for the first episode, and then they gave some breakdowns of different characters. So, here are the characters, the names. There's Connie, there's Lawrence, there's Starton, Dr. Smith, Kabar, Indra, and Elena.
Dr. Smith from Lost in Space. Danger! Yes. Danger! Danger!
Exactly.
I hope Gary Oldman plays him again.
So, descriptions here. Connie is an African-American woman in early 30s. She's lost her husband and has a death warrant on her head from her home planet.
She's Spock, in other words.
And she is a mercenary pilot. Next, we have Lawrence, who's also in his 30s and described as someone with a dodgy moral compass. The character is a thief and will pilot the ship Picard takes on his mission. And then Starton is terrified of space and specializes in positronic brains.
So like Data is replicated. Okay, so we've got more Datas.
And then we got Dr. Smith is a hologram who helps the crew and is programmed to be constantly learning, but never to become too self-aware. So we're never going to get the doctor. Well,
so he's going to be dumber than the doctor? That's not good.
He's an upgrade to the EMH.
It sounds like a downgrade to me.
Next is we have Kabar, which is a 17-year-old Romulan martial artist who is extremely devoted to Picard. I don't know what that means, but...
This is weird. We got a... Oh, my God. We have a martial artist devoted to Picard. Picard Jitsu. He's named a martial art after Picard.
Yeah. Is
it going to be like the Pink Panther where Picard walks into his quarters and he just jumps out and, like, attacks him to keep him, like, on his toes? Like Kato? Kato, is that his
name? Oh, yeah. That would, the Pink Panthers when they would attack him. Yeah, that would be actually really funny.
That would be awesome. He's a little Romulan guy. He's, like, so devoted to him, he'll attack him and surprise him to keep his guard up.
Oh, those were great when he would just show up at home and his butler manservant would attack him constantly to keep him on his toes.
I hope that's the Romulan. That'd be so great. He's got nowhere to go since it's post 2009 movie. So Romulus is blown up. So he's taken in the Romulan to attack him.
All right. And then we have Indra, who is smart but socially inept woman in her 20s. And then
Tilly? You mean Tilly?
Yeah, kind of. It sounds like
they've cast another Tilly.
It might be. And then Elena, a former intelligence officer with an abusive personality in her mid-40s to 50s. And that's what we get for the character breakdown.
So no familiar characters. So Picard's not even going to be in it then. That's interesting.
Obviously Picard's in there.
Well, we already know. Yeah, but I think we know everything about Picard.
No, I don't think he's in it. They didn't put him on the list.
But Picard is no longer part of Starfleet when the show starts. And we have...
He's making a vineyard.
He's tying back vines or grapevines. And then, so it's a 10-episode first season. And like we said before, this has to do with the destruction of the Romulan Empire and the Prime timeline. So that's what we know. Any thoughts?
Sounds like it's trying to be Star Trek Renegades. All these characters sound really dodgy. And Renegades, mm-hmm. there's also the hologram thing going on. It sounds like Renegades. Because, like, if you think about it, like, Discovery is basically a homogenization of what was pitched as Captain Pike and Axanar. Because you're dealing, with a Klingon war in season one, and now we're dealing with Captain Pike in season two, all pre-TOS, which is very much like both of those two fan films wanted to be. And then it sounds like CBS is just trying to, like, where did all the money go? Let's copy those things. It's what it seems like. I mean, that doesn't all these this cast description just makes me think of Renegades.
Renegades. It does sound like Renegades. Absolutely. Holly, Guy, any interjections or thoughts on that news? I mean, this is pretty big news. So we got some.
This is pretty big news. Yeah,
pretty big information on this.
My thought. I don't know if I agree with the Renegades part.
Did you watch Renegades, Guy?
That's part of the reason why I don't necessarily know if I agree, because I didn't see it.
Don't
watch it. Well, then you can't disagree then.
Right, exactly. I can't necessarily agree or disagree. Because yeah. I didn't actually see it. I don't know. Personally, I'm interested. I mean, this seems intriguing.
Mm-hmm.
The Romulan martial artist is interesting. Did you mention that he was from an all-female Romulan sect? Mention that part?
I didn't see that at all.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so
Kabar is apparently from fun.
Yeah, Kabar is apparently a male from an all-female Romulan sect. So like he's like one of the few males in there. So that's going to be interesting too. There's like this complete like he was the character that really piqued my interest. I was like, that's going to be kind of cool. So whatever his deal, he's like assigned by the Romulans to protect Picard, but he's one of the only males in an all-female protecting group. Which I think for my first thought was, I kind of want to know more about the all-female protecting group. You know what I mean?
I'm for that. Sign me up.
That seems like that's kind of cool to me. There's like an entire branch of like killer
Amazons.
Romulan Amazons.
Sign me
sounds
up.
Interesting to me. That sounds intriguing. So to some degree, that sounded like a story.
Well, I don't know.
I don't know if I would go sexy, but prime, certainly intriguing.
The prime, whatever you want, a subscription is kind of expensive at first, but then it pays off later.
Yeah. So
it's an Amazon joke. Sorry.
Yeah, you were working on that. That one was a stretch.
Sorry. I can only try.
Right. It was a good attempt. I liked it. But yeah, I mean, personally, that was the part that really kind of hooked me. I was like, in a way, I'm just intrigued that they've added that layer to the Romulans. Because then it makes me think, was Sela part of that? You know, was Sela like some aspect of that? Was there like a branch of that? You know, you start looking back on that and start wondering.
Sela's way too lazy for that kind of stuff.
Yeah, she wouldn't go out and kick
She's like, I just want to squeeze my phaser trigger, my disruptor trigger. She seems too lazy. She's always like sneaky. I don't know.
Tal Shiar. I'm just going to be Tal Shiar.
I want to see.
Screw this like beating people up thing. I just want to Tal Shiar it, okay? Well, can I just Tal Shiar?
Well, it's just, I mean, like, I'm intrigued. How did Romulans invent a martial arts when they wear couches? How do you move?
That is true.
How do you move in a nimble, martial arty way when you're wearing what Romulans wear?
I'll tell you how it happens, Dave. You sit down on the couch, you think you're safe and cozy, but there's someone underneath
you. It's a trap.
You sat down on a Romulan. That's how you know you're dead.
Holly, what did any reactions on this news?
I mean, this is the first I'm hearing of it, so it's kind of exciting. They do sound like a little ragtag group of folks.
Renegades.
So, I don't know. I've not seen Renegades, and I think you guys have talked to me about not seeing Renegades before.
It's not really worth your time. It's a hard watch.
Yeah, well, it sounds intriguing. So I'm excited.
If you're bored one day, and you don't, and you hide all the knives so you don't slit your wrists, go for it.
Hide all the knives.
I think I will waste my time on that sometime after I've seen every other good episode of Star Trek.
And after you've seen Star Trek Continues, because Star Trek Continues is so worth watching, even with all the bad press going around.
Right.
But yeah, the shows are so beautiful. It's so well done.
Cool. I mean, good stuff. I'm very, very happy that we got a little bit of news. And apparently it's coming a lot sooner than we think.
Yeah.
I think they said the end of this year, didn't they? I mean, it'll probably get pushed back, but
hey, that'd be nice to only have a couple month gap between end of Discovery and, like, you know, and then the Picard series. That way, we can, you know, get this new Star Trek before the end of the year. I'd be all for that.
I think that's the intention. I think that's the battle plan, is that they're trying to make it so that they lost a lot of people on CBS All Access when Discovery went down, right?
Well, yeah,
Discovery,
there's nothing was else over. To watch.
Right. All of us just logged out.
Yeah.
So we canceled the subscriptions.
But this year we've got the Twilight Zone starting soon. So, I mean, I'm intrigued by that. I'm excited to see Twilight Zone. Hell, we should maybe even talk about Twilight Zone on the podcast.
Maybe. Yeah. I'm not as intrigued yet. It hasn't really caught me yet. But that's okay.
I mean, I like the old Twilight Zone. So I'm interested.
I love the old Twilight Zone.
That's why I want to give the new one a shot. Because I'm like, oh, that's interesting. I'd like to see what they do with it.
And George, go ahead.
I was going to say the problem I have with Twilight Zone is that too often they go for the jump scares and the cheap horror when they try to remake Twilight Zone, and they don't go for the high level thinking that Rod Serling had.
Right. Mm.
And that's what I really liked about Twilight Zone, was the stuff that made you go, holy crap. Today you watch some of those old 1950s, 1960s Twilight Zones and you're like, damn, you know, you're still like, damn, you know, and it's like, it's not
as heady as it used to be. I'm hoping for heady.
I'm hoping for heady too. If it goes heady, then I'm all about Twilight Zone.
Yeah.
We'll but if they're just going to sit there and try to scare you all the time, then I'm like, I didn't need another horror flick.
Yeah. I mean, like, if you go see the monster, if you watch The Monsters Are Due on Maple Street, is an awesome, you know, talk about paranoia and not trusting each other and stuff like that. That's just a great, I watched it. Actually, I watch it with my kids all the time.
What is it with dads that, like, oh yeah, I'm going to show this to my kids. And you're like, why would you do that? I'm like, I'm okay with it.
Yeah. Well, it's not super violent. And it's funny because I love it because I hate it at first because they're like, it's black and white. This sucks. And then after, like, they're done watching, like, holy shit, did you see that last part or did you get that last part? And I'm like, yeah, I got it. You know,
that happened.
The other cool thing is with the new one is Jordan Peele's doing it. And if you haven't seen Get Out, that is a really fun movie. It's not necessarily a horror movie. It has horror aspects to it, but it's really fun. And it's really like a heady movie. And so if he can do something like that and be, I mean, I'm sure he's not the only one working on it. I'm sure he's got a whole writing crew with him, but I think it could be pretty good.
Yeah.
So I
have some faith that he can do it right, but I'm going to let other people get in there first. I don't like to be jump scared. And so if you know, I've got it. That's what Troy does, my co-host on Geek Tank. He'll watch stuff and then he'll be like, yeah, don't watch this. It's just full of jump scares. And I'll be like, oh, okay.
See, that never bothered me. So I kind of like it. I mean, I don't like it if it's just all jump scares. I like it something a little cool. It's a cool story behind it too. But
yeah, I don't like to be startled. So it's sort of a thing. My brain's wired backwards or whatever. I don't know. Mm-hmm. So speaking of kids, my son loves the motion picture.
Oh, really?
That is the weirdest thing ever.
Yeah, well, he's definitely your child. I know.
Yeah, but I mean, like, he watched the motion picture and he's like, oh, that's probably my favorite one. And I'm like, well, okay, well, let's watch all the rest of them. And so he watched all of them. And yeah, okay, he agreed that Star Trek V was a little weak. But he was like, yeah, but I still like the motion picture. And I'm like,
why?
Okay. That's what I was like. I was like, I mean, okay, I'm a hardcore Trekkie. I'm always going to love the motion picture, but it's not my favorite.
Yeah. It drags out way too long.
It's like that phrase, I love you, but I don't have to like you right now.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. out of the mouths of babes.
Weird. And he's 9. He shouldn't have the attention span for that movie, but he does.
That's definitely your DNA.
I know. That's my DNA expressing right there.
Yeah, my kids would not sit through the motion picture.
But how many Cheerios has he eaten for a Star Trek sticker?
That's right.
That's totally true. He did not eat all the Cheerios for Next Gen.
You haven't had your comeuppance yet, son. It's time to start eating.
I don't think I'll ever forget that guy. That's such a priceless story.
Yeah, why don't you just tell a quick story of that, because people haven't heard that story before.
In a long time.
You got to come out here and smell the Cheerios from the Cheerio plant here.
Still like that thing. When the Next Gen came out, the very first season, back in 1987, Cheerios had a deal going where you could get stickers for all of just peel stickers. And I wanted all of them. And so I convinced him to buy Cheerios so that I could collect the stickers. And her thing was, that's all right, but you have to eat them. You can't just buy the boxes and throw them away.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so I was eating Cheerios forever. Wow. And to this day, I still hate the taste of Cheerios because I found so many Cheerios to get all those stickers.
Like, you still have the stickers? Bridge
crow. No, of course not. That would be worth like a mint now because they were so hard to get a hold of. And you had to like buy a zillion boxes. There was one in each box. And of course, you know how it goes.
Got the same one like 12,000 times.
You ended up with like 16 Wesley Crushers. You know how that goes. Yeah. And you wanted Captain Picard. You ended up with like 16 Wesley Crushers. And that's how it was. And since I am 2 days younger than Will Wheaton, mm-hmm. I hated Wesley Crusher. Because I could have been on the bridge of the Enterprise.
I could have.
But no, he was on the bridge of the Enterprise and not me. But yeah, Will Wheaton and I almost share the same birthday. Nice. Yeah, his birthday is the 29th of July in 1972, and I'm the 31st. So
I'm sorry, guy, that got away from you.
Yeah.
The role of the lifetime that got away.
So close.
Well,
I could have been a contender.
I could have been. I know. Well, should we get into our episode?
Yes, yes.
Do that.
Yeah. So this is Star Trek Discovery. The episode is Light and Shadows. And this is season 2, episode 7. And it aired February 28th, 2019. So, what's that?
You beat me to it. I was all ready to say all those things.
Oh, cool. Nice. I'm going to let you do it. So we're on the Discovery, and Burnham and Pike are talking about Spock's connection to the Red Angel and the Red Burst. And so they're talking about that Spock's mental breakdown might be connected to the Red Angel. And that there might be the reason why, maybe the Red Angel's reason why he's having a mental breakdown, or maybe it's causing it, or maybe the knowledge of it is giving him that breakdown. So that's they're kind of speculating at the moment. And I guess Spock's shuttlecraft has disappeared in the Mutara sector. It's a little throwback to Wrath of Khan.
Star Trek 2.
Mm-hmm. And obviously the Federation and Section 31 are looking for Spock, and Michael Burnham's concerned for his for her brother. She doesn't want Section 31 finding them, so she has a thought that maybe she should return to Vulcan and see if her mother Amanda has any information since they last parted. And Pike says, go ahead, go check it out. So she takes off to check on her mom and see if she has any information on Spock. Meanwhile, Discovery is still in Saru's homeworld planet. And while they're there, there's a brief interaction between Ash Tyler and Pike. Apparently,
they're lovers now.
Yeah, apparently he's pissed off that Michael Burnham took off. And he wants to know where she's going.
It's personal.
It's personal leave, private leave, personal leave. It's personal. I'm not going to let you know. And he's kind of pissed off at that. So they're having sort of the locking horns thing between the two. So while they're there in orbit, there is a opening of a time rift. So there's a spike in tachyons. And so there's a giant opening, and we see like a ghost or like a replay in Pike and Ash Tyler. And so they realize they're like in some kind of time rift. And so they back Discovery up. Yeah. And then they're going to they want to fire torpedoes into it to not torpedoes, but a probe into it. And but apparently they can't do it close enough. So I guess they got to use a shuttlecraft.
And Pike's the best one qualified for some reason.
Yes. And again, Ash Tyler's going to argue with him because, you know, why not?
Because Ash Tyler is kind of like my son, I've decided.
Oh, is he?
He just has to argue with everything.
Oh, you shouldn't. Oh. You shouldn't have said that because Aaron doesn't want Ash Tyler to live very long.
I keep hoping Ash Tyler dies.
Okay, well then. Then don't think of him as my kid then.
I wasn't going to put him in that category, but all right.
That's why I was just warning you because Aaron's not happy with Ash Tyler. I'm not super either, but you know.
I mean, the last probably five or six episodes of our podcast, I've been plotting Ash Tyler's death.
Well, the great thing is like I remember in season one, Aaron, you felt so bad for the guy. You were like, oh, we shouldn't be shit. We were both down on him, and then it's like episode 10 or 11 when we found that he was being sexually assaulted by Laurel. You're like, oh, I feel bad for him. I'm like, nope, I don't. Now you're plotting his demise. I just think it's funny.
Well, I don't like his character, and I hate that they just keep using him. You know, I just wish he'd go away.
He's probably part of the Section 31 show unless they kill him off the season. But then again, they can always bring him back because deaths are meaningless in Star Trek now.
Yes, I know. Well, Spock proved that, so.
Yeah, I was going to say deaths were meaningless in Star Trek starting in Star Trek 3.
But yeah. they're super meaningless now because they've brought back pretty much everyone we lost in season one, except for Lorca and Landry.
Not Lorca. So as we go back to Pike is going to take the shuttlecraft, and Tyler is coming with him, apparently. And he refers to him as a bad penny. Just keeps turning up. And there's this insinuation that Tyler keeps on throwing at Pike that because he missed the Klingon War, he's taking all these chances.
Taking all the risks.
Yeah, which is kind of weird. So, I don't know. And also, Pike brings out the fact that, you know, Ash Tyler has Volk still in him and that he killed Dr. Culber. And, you know,
he's like, I'm not racist against Klingons. I'm just racist against murdering Klingons who live or here on the ship.
Yeah. It was kind of an interesting conversation. And, you know, again, I still like Pike.
Pike is great. I want a Captain Pike show now.
I do too. I so want a Captain Pike show. And now we jumped. We get a jump to Vulcan, which it's raining. We've never seen rain on Vulcan, at least not to my knowledge. I've never seen rain on Vulcan. And she comes. Michael Burnham comes home to Sarek's home to visit Amanda, and she's kind of going through the home, and nobody's there to meet her, of course, because it's Vulcan.
It's not logical to meet someone at the door.
You'll find me when you find me.
Exactly.
What are you doing? Taking a shit.
On the living room floor. That's where you do it in Vulcan.
So she passes by a three-dimensional chess set, and then she has this like memory. Hashtag. Yeah, when she's a child, and she has this fond memory of she's trying to do the Vulcan symbol, live long and prosper, and Spock is kind of like, why are you laughing? And he's like Vulcans. I mean, emotions confuse him, and you know, it was interesting. And I, Holly, just so you know, I didn't hate the kid at that point.
He wasn't punchable in that scene. I will agree, he's not as punchable in that scene.
When
he hated him in what was it, Brother?
When he first showed up, we were just like, that kid.
I couldn't stand him the first time I saw him.
Yeah, just his face. We were like, ugh.
God.
I know. That was my reaction. And Holly was like, he's just a kid. I go, I know.
Man. I know. Aaron and I are both monsters. It's fine. It's okay.
We're all right with it.
We've been called worse.
Yes, I know. So we didn't hate him here. At least I didn't. And
his face was way less punchable this time. I don't know what happened.
All right. So when after that, Michael then finally meets up with her mother, Amanda, and she's basically says Spock is still missing, but Sarek is there and he's meditating, and he's
it's pronounced eavesdropping.
Oh, right. That's right.
I guess technically, yeah.
And he says that he's doing the Tok'mar,
Either that or Sarek also gave Amanda a radioactive rock that could be tracked.
Right. Maybe. Yeah, that's possible. That's very possible.
He was meditating. He wasn't sleeping.
He was eavesdropping. But then again, she wasn't super smart. They're basically speaking with an earshot. Vulcans have big ears for a reason, right?
Yeah, I mean, they hear everything.
That's not just aesthetics, right? Yeah, that seemed...
I think Spock's proved that more than once, actually, he could hear things.
He actually has.
I just think it was unwise that she's just like, she's not like, Michael, come here. They're just right
come here,
Sarek.
Let's
right,
talk about everything right in front of him. Right yeah. in front of Sarek. Don't tell Sarek this, but we're talking about things that we don't want Sarek to know about right in front of Sarek.
Right in front
Try again, wife.
Yeah. So the Tok'mar is a way to bring lost souls back home. So that's what he's trying to reach out to Spock.
So why did Spock do that when he lost his big bear cat?
I don't know. Maybe it only works on Vulcans. And again, where's Cybok?
Yeah, where's Cybok?
Yeah,
where?
Nobody even talks about
Cybok. Hashtag. We talk about Cybok almost every single weekend.
Every week we want Cybok, and if they don't show him, I'm going to go down to CBS All Access, and I'm just going to punch them all in their punchable faces for not putting Cybok in these episodes. At least a mention.
Throw a bone. Come on. We need to see him smoking. Space.
We also have lots of. Both my children, both my children, both my children going on here.
He said both our children. Cybok is not ours. Cybok was from a previous marriage. Full vocal.
I just want him in Sarek's basement, you know, listen to the Grateful Dead and smoking weed, you know, like, yeah, Dad, I got Spock here. So
I want to see Cybok too. They've got a giant house. Where is Cybok?
Where is Cybok?
He's just off camera every single time the camera's there.
Like Amanda goes, would you like to see Cybok? She's like,
no.
No, it's all right.
Oh, can I get a doobie from him? Yeah, that'd be cool.
Yeah, I know, right?
The next thing, she's smoking.
Yeah. Oh, God. I just hope he shows up. Please show up. Especially with the Red Angels.
The Red Angel Cybok.
He is the Red Angel.
Cybok's the Red Angel.
All he wants is to share his pain.
So when he fought with God, God sent him into the future and he became the Red Angel so he could go back in time and fix Michael and Spock's relationship because he was so sad and so bummed out that they were always fighting. Or whatever.
Yeah, what they really needed is Discovery, but then that means that what does God need with a starship? And there we go.
Yes.
Very much so. So Amanda basically says that she doesn't, she's going to protect Spock at all costs and that she doesn't want him arrested for murders he didn't commit. And so she keeps on saying that she hasn't seen him. But Michael's not convinced and he thinks that you know something. And somehow she breaks her down to show him to have Amanda show Michael where she's keeping Spock.
She's keeping him in the Katra Stone Cave.
The Katra Stone Cave. It's like the wine cellar.
So how does Cybok how does Tuvok not believe in the Katra when they have freaking Katra stones all over freaking Vulcan?
I don't know. I think
I don't know what Tuvok's problem was. Tuvok had lots of like really weird issues anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, like, honestly, it wasn't even really like a canon thing. Tuvok was like weird. I mean, like, even in story, Tuvok kept doing things like, I have problems with Vulcan society because, I don't know, I'm weird. I don't know. Like, something weird.
He doesn't know things. Like, he was alive during the time where Spock has given his Katra back from the body of McCoy. How does he believe it's a myth and doesn't know anything about it? He was alive during these events.
Was he, I mean, I don't know much about him, but was he maybe on, like, a colony and not really on Vulcan?
He was on the USS Excelsior.
You know,
born and raised?
I mean, he was born a Vulcan. He had emotional problems as a child. And he got a hard-on for an alien girl, and he got to go to the Vulcan monastery school to get his dick calmed.
Oh, okay. Yep.
It happens.
But I mean, you end up with, like, T'Pol doing, like, weird things, too. I mean, it's like T'Pol would, like, deny that there was time travel when faced with time travel.
Right.
Like, yeah, in her face. Right. Like, Archer is sitting there going, we just traveled through time. And she's like, well, there's no real proof of that. Archer's like, we just
did it. The Vulcan Science Academy has not. Well, she's like, the Vulcan Science Academy hasn't been able to prove time travel exists, so it doesn't.
Right. I mean, so it's clear that Vulcans will sometimes deny stuff right up to... Again, Vulcans act a lot like my child. Deny stuff that happened right there.
I swear I didn't do it, Dad. It's in your hand.
It's in your hand. I didn't do it. But you're holding it.
Okay. It's all over you.
It was transported here by my friend. It was a prank. I didn't do it. I had nothing to do with it. My hands are big. Sorry. I didn't realize it was here. My hands are so big.
All right. Well, from there we get Amanda just says – she says that Spock is not how Michael remembers him. So, and then we jump back to –
You mean autistic? It's not how we remember Spock either, but you know.
So we get.
I have something to say about this, but we'll get there when we get there. So
we get there when we get there. We get back to Saru's homeworld, Kaminar, and the shuttle's leaving Discovery, and Pike and Tyler are flying, and I guess they've been. They have to be careful not to get the time bends, as Tilly calls it. So they have to kind of go slowly into the aperture, not the aperture, but the time rift, and then move slowly out of it. And they want to fire the probe into this rift's aperture opening so they can get any kind of readings and find out what this time rift is all about. And from there, when they're flying in, Pike sees hears some screaming, and he sees him holding a phaser and shooting Ash Tyler with
he's
it.
He's like, "This is my best dreams."
And he's like, "I could live with that."
Yeah, that's good for me. Like, kill Ash Tyler in a few minutes. That'd be great.
Yeah, I thought it was kind of funny.
Aaron was hoping for it too.
And I just like how he just looked back and he was like, "All right. That's going to happen."
Well, you know, that's like one of my favorite things about him is how observant he is. Mm-hmm. And he just absorbs all this information, but he never addresses it until it's time. And I just love that about Pike.
Yeah, he saw it happen and he didn't like bring it up to Ashley. He's like, "I just saw me shooting you from the future."
Right. He's just like always putting pieces together, and I just love it.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. So they're going into this time rift to fire the probe off, and this is when they start running into a whole bunch of problems with the rift. That apparently, what do they call it? A time tsunami? Did you say time tsunami? Is that what they called it?
Yeah, time tsunami.
Where we're just getting these like. Storms and waves that they're getting lost inside there, and they're losing contact with the shuttle, and they can't see it where it's going.
Wasn't the tsunami mentioned just at the end of the episode?
Yeah.
I don't remember what they were called at this point.
Yeah, but it was just basically they're getting lost
they
in this time
rift. They called it like toilet waves swirling, or something. The water swirling down a toilet is what they called it.
Yeah. Yeah. one of Tilly's finer metaphors.
Great.
So actually, when Stamets that gave that example, water circling a drain.
So, but anyways, they can't get any readings from the shuttlecraft. They're getting lost, and I guess Tilly says they have only about 5 hours to live. So we got like a time limit.
Radiation will kill them.
Yeah, with radiation. So this is where Saru says, hey, you know, when we had the Harry Mudd thing, remember Commander Stamets didn't seem to be affected by it. So maybe he can help help with his tardigrade DNA. And so Tilly goes down to engineering to consult with him. And then we go back to Vulcan, and Amanda brings Michael to their underground basement, the wine cellar. And Spock is bearded, and he's muttering to himself, and he is not responsive to anybody. And he's talking basically the first doctrines of logic. That's what he keeps on repeating over and over again. And he keeps on saying the numbers 841947 over and over again. And he looks crazy.
I think that's my phone number. Wait.
Who's he trying to call?
It's the same number on my luggage.
I was going to say, that's the number some idiot would have on his luggage.
867-530-9.
Starting to call William Tarr 444-444-4-4-4-4-8-8-8-8-8-8-8.
Right, exactly. Amanda says, you know, she's going to keep him there because she has diplomatic immunity because she's the ambassador's wife. And then Sarek shows up and he goes, unless the ambassador objects.
Dun dun dun.
So Sarek's back to being a dick again. So,
ambassador of checks and Cheerios.
And Cheerios. then we're back inside the rift, and you know they're still trying to get themselves reorientated, I guess is the best way to put it. And Pike just tells Tyler to vent the plasma from the nacelles, much like Spock did in Galileo 7. And Tyler's like, well, that's fuel we need. If we lose all that, we won't be able to get back. And Pike's like, well, that's a great way for us to be seen for where we are. And then this is where you get into the whole survivor's guilt of the war, how he keeps saying you're making stupid choices because you feel
trying to make up for not fighting in the war.
Right, right. And this is and then Pike's basically like, you're not following orders, a direct order from me.
And I will put you in the brig, and you'll get a court-martial. Does Section 31 have court-martials? I guess. I don't know. How much about Section 31 makes sense in the show?
I have a weird side note on this.
Sure.
So I was doing my drawing, and I was drawing over there on my desk, and just like I usually do, I just had random Star Trek playing, the original series, and I had just gone to any random episode on first season. Mm-hmm. And would you believe that Thursday when I was drawing, I had randomly watched Galileo 7. So that night I'm watching Discovery and he's like, I'm going to vent the nacelles. And I'm like, okay, this is freaky. Yeah. How is it that I would have had to, of all of the original series episodes that I could have picked to randomly watch today,
right,
I had just watched the Galileo 7. Like, today, like right, 4 hours ago.
That's hilarious.
That's hilarious.
So bizarre. That's
so cool, though.
Yeah, my dad texted me. He actually seen the episode before I even started watching it. He was like telling me about the credits for the previous one next week, and he was telling me, oh, look, this Galileo 7 reference. And I'm like, okay, I haven't seen it yet, Dad.
Thanks for ruining it.
Thanks for not letting me figure that out myself.
So when Stamets gets up to date with the situation, he uses the mycelium network to plot the shuttle's trajectory, but Stamets says once they're beyond the rift's event horizon, time would kind of like get all messed up. Like you couldn't even get
track them if they get too far.
Yeah, what do you say? Like a grain of sand
in a hurricane being grabbed by tweezers.
Yeah, yeah. So they got that. Then we go back to Vulcan, and we have the confrontation with Sarek and Amanda and Michael, and that you know he finally finds out that Spock's hanging out in the Katra Stone basement.
Katra Stone warehouse. Get your Katra Stone here.
And get your Katra Stones.
Is it like a kidney stone? Is it hard to pass?
That would, those stones look big, man.
I mean, it was simple to carve into, so.
That's your Uncle Jack. Don't do that.
Uncle Jack's Katra's mixing a couple of brain cells now.
It's going to be great. Defacing the Katra stones. So, yeah, so Spock is, you know,
how many all people over the Spock murdered?
I know. So Spock's all over the place, and then he starts quoting Alice in Wonderland.
And Sarek's like, he's regressing. He's gotten
He's
stupider.
Getting worse. He's getting worse.
It's like Spock's brain all over again.
Apparently, this is the only book that Michael ever reads, because she's like, ooh, I know that one.
I know that one. Only one Amanda ever reads either.
It's yeah, I was going to say, it's the only one Amanda ever read. She just read it over and over and over and over and over.
I know, exactly. So,
at least she wasn't reading the Moby Dick all the time.
That's true.
Yes, that's right. So basically, he says that Spock had a learning disability, and that she got from his mother. And I don't know.
That's kind of a callback to Star Trek 2009. They're like, "Oh, you did well despite your disadvantage. What's that? Your human mother, of course."
Right, exactly. Which
right, it does change the dialogue there.
How do you
mean? Well, because originally in 2009, that was just straight up racism, right? Because that was just your disadvantage was that you happened to be half blooded human.
Now it's both. Now it's both racism.
Yeah, now it's you happen to be
disabled,
dyslexic.
You know. Dyslexic.
It's like
because you're human,
right? Yeah. Right. But yeah. I mean, before it was straight up racism. So right. It was like you know, oh, you did well, even though you're a pathetic human. You know, you can't possibly be awesome because you're a human and we're Vulcans, and you know that's the way it goes. So I don't know. It kind of takes a little bit away from their Vulcan high horsiness. In 2009 by making him dyslexic. So in that sense, sort of there.
It's still racist.
It is.
How is it racist?
Yeah.
Well, because she's human.
Yeah, well, it's human. A human. Right. It's a term they get from the human race for a condition that they don't have on Vulcan, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it's, I mean...
Yeah, like I said, I'm with Holly on this one. So I think that they took the racism out. It's not racist anymore. Well, now despite the fact that you're dyslexic.
But the racism makes sense for Vulcans because Vulcans are all a bunch of giant dicks. So I still think there's racism behind it because Vulcans haven't changed. Vulcans are still raging dicks.
Yeah, but they took it away. It was late in 2009. Now it's not blatant anymore. Now it's, oh, well, you did well even though you're dyslexic. Well, okay, well, that's normal. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, they were still being jerks about it because you don't go up to a dyslexic kid and say, good job, Timmy, even though you're a dyslexic idiot. You know, you don't really say that.
Right,
but
right.
You know, even, you know, but still, they took away the blatant racism. It's not blatant anymore. Now they have it all subversive.
Although you have all of, like... basically Star Trek Enterprise, where they're constantly racist towards humans.
We clearly have Leith, which was absolutely racist all the way through it. I mean, all of Leith was you know, season one Discovery episode Leith was just totally blatant, stupid, smack you in the face all over the place racism.
So, right.
I mean, it's not like the Vulcans are absolved of their racism anyway. I mean, it's still very straightforward, but... yeah, I just think it's interesting that in this one maneuver, it undoes the 2009 movie. You know, it's interesting how that takes out that one piece. It's like, it's so weird how canon in Star Trek is like...
well, it's two separate
canons.
...a bunch
of blocks right now. But, you know, everything's like held up here and like pinned there. And it's so weird. You know what I mean?
But still, the best line in the 2009 movies when he says, live long and prosper, like, fuck you. God, it's so great. I love it so much.
It is beautiful.
Quinto's amazing.
Yeah. It's still
beautiful. Okay, I'm sorry. Didn't mean to do that. I've got something else to say about this when we get down the road.
So we get to we're still back in the Katrastrom basement, and Spock's still carving numbers into Uncle Jack, and when he's doing that, basically Michael's like, he's really, really bad to get to a doctor. You know, I mean, you can't keep him in the basement, take him anywhere. And then Sarek goes through the whole logic. It's like, I'm not going to lose one, you know, my son here, who's, you know, completely out of his mind. And then Michael, you already broke the rules before, and you know how that turned out. So you better, you know, turn Spock in to the authorities, to the Federations, because it's your duty. It's this is what you're sworn to do. So you have to do this.
Right.
And then Michael's like, yeah, I guess. So this is where Michael, they must put Spock on her shuttle, and she delivers them to Captain Leland on the Section 31 ship, and they're going to operate on his brain while they're on the ship.
So did you notice what they were going to operate on his brain with?
I didn't pick up anything.
A mind
special.
Sifter.
What is that from, Guy? I'm
that's a Toss episode.
It. Yeah, which one is that from?
From the one with the Organians. That's a Klingon device.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that. That's from the battle one, with the Organian peace thing.
Right. The Organian peace treaty.
Yeah,
which suddenly has just walked right out of my brain. But it will come back in a second, because they always do. But that episode is, I mean, because I can see the entire episode's playing through my head right now. I just have to get past the teaser, and then I'll be able to see the opening credits, and then I'll be able to go through the opening scene, and I'll see the title, Patterns of Force. No, that's not it. Damn it. I'm going to have to look it up now, because I'm not going to wait. But that's a mind sifter. He even said it.
Yeah, I think I heard mind sifter.
It's Private Little War.
Private Little War. No. Yeah. Are you sure it's Private Little War?
I thought it was.
I thought that was the one with the Mugatu.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Organians show up in...
Aaron of Mercy?
Aaron of Mercy, that's it. Aaron of Mercy.
Yeah.
God, that took me forever. That should not have... Aaron, you and I are slipping, man. We're slipping. I
know. Well, you know, we're old age.
We're old. We're old, yeah. And we're slipping. Anyway, but yeah, it's a mind sifter. And, of course... That's another one of those where the Trekkies have the edge, because if you're, well, I'll let you keep going, because I want to after you say this next part, we'll bring this back in. But that's a mind sifter.
But that's a mind sifter. It's like a flower sifter.
Sorry, I keep interjecting. I'm sorry, Aaron.
No, it's fine. Absolutely, it's what we do. So, just in a side point. Sarek's voice when he says that they got to give Spock up to the authorities, he seems like he's going to cry. Do you guys pick up on that?
Yeah.
I was like, fuck, guys, honestly, you got to stop with the Vulcans crying bit. It's not there. You have to understand. I mean, maybe Spock is going crazy right now, but it's not what they do. I don't know. It just frustrated me. Anyways, so we're back in the rift, and the shuttle is getting closer to the aperture. And they're going to, and the plasma levels are down, and the shields are down, and everything's looking bad. And this is when the shuttle, something bumps into the shuttle, and it's a giant, it's their probe, but it's now from the future, and it's at an upgrade, and it turns into a giant mechanical squid.
Because reasons.
So. Yeah, we don't know why, but so they're in trouble.
I'm hoping it's temporal Cold War stuff.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I think that's too smart.
I mean, they made it seem like there's two sides now, because like, well, at the end of the episode, let's get to it. I'll get to it later.
Okay. Well, so now we're back on. Then we jump back onto Section 31 ship, and like I said, they're going to work on Spock and with the mind sifter, as you brought up. And they're asking about Spock, and he said that he's brilliant and he's curious. But when he was a child, he had difficulties because he had this Vulcan version of dyslexia, which was inherited from his mother, Amanda, his human side. And they're basically saying, look, we're going to work on him. We're going to travel to the next star base, and you can pick him up there, and everything will be fine. And this is where she's kind of hesitant to leave him there when with the people from Section 31, because obviously she doesn't trust them whatsoever. And then we're back on Discovery, and this is where they're kind of trying to figure out where the shuttle's trajectory is. And basically, Stamets has this kind of figured out. And he's using the plasma burns to plot out the map, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if anybody's else is on
the following
podcast
the trail of the plasma that was released by the.
It's okay. It helps him identify the flight pattern.
Yeah, we just interrupted you a bunch, so we're just trying to get to the recap. Sorry, trying to be good.
Oh yeah, that's like that was ever a thing.
Being good, yeah.
We're being good now.
Yeah.
This is like
so
doing it now.
You're being good now. The creature or whatever the probe is the Octoprobe is now they've realized it's 500 years old from the future. So whatever sent it back modified it and did all this crazy stuff to it.
Stuff on here that's not even on the periodic table. Maybe he just doesn't know the periodic table very good.
Right.
Or maybe the Klingon one's missing some.
And this is when one of the arms comes in and it like ropes around Tyler, and he's getting choked out. And one of the arms also gets stuck onto the console, and it's like reading out, like going through Discovery's information. And this is where Pike pulls out the phaser, and this is where he saw what happened before. So he couldn't see that the mechanical octopus arm was around Tyler, and so that's why he's aiming at him. And and back on the ship, Stamets basically takes Tilly to the transporter room, and it's like, I know where to go. You just got to trust me. And Tilly has a little hesitation because we're off just a little bit. You know, I'm beaming you into nowhere. And she's like, I trust you. Don't worry about it. And Stamets gets beamed onto their shuttle because they have the right coordinates. And
trust in math almighty. Do the cross and take the math communion.
The math communion. Yeah, I know. So he gets on board, and Stamets basically says that I was 10 minutes, you're 10 minutes in the future. So
yes, I'm here, but 10 minutes in your future.
Right, exactly. And so he back on Discovery, then we get, Tilly's, obviously confirmed that Stamets is on there, and the probe is going through all Discovery's information, and this is where we get the android Arium. Yeah, something happens with her while she's going looking. We get a little
three red dots.
She kind of gets the Terminator look.
I think she's getting taken over by the AI in there. And the thing 100%. Is, I wish we had episodes with Arium before so we could feel something for her. But she's just been just kind of there.
I mean,
to be fair, I think, remember, I don't know, the first episode with Pike when he was like, basically, let's get to know each other. And she said her complete title. And what was it? Lieutenant.
When he specifically said, don't say titles.
No ranks.
Or don't say ranks.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, that's part of her character. That was part of understanding, she's a machine. She's equipment to the ship.
Interesting.
I guess if they're gonna do something to her where they're gonna turn her into a bad guy and possibly kill her off, it'd be nice to kind of know something about her before they do that. Just from a storytelling perspective, it's kind of less impactful to do something like this to a character if we don't really care about them.
She has been in a lot of scenes in the last 3 or 4 episodes.
She has. Where she's just kind of been there.
Yeah, but that's the point. What?
That's the point.
I'm just saying, that's how you Trojan horse someone. Like, but, that's the point.
I mean, yeah, the Trojan horsing her, but, like, if you're going to do something drastic to a character that we don't know much or anything about, it's hard to care as much. Like, if they did something to Tilly, I would be like, oh, my God, they're doing something to Tilly.
Right. But, well, they did something to Tilly already.
Yeah.
No, but I mean, like,
yeah, yeah.
But sure. I mean, like, I was more concerned about Tilly because I like Tilly because she's a character. Arium just window dressing. When something happens to window dressing, I don't know if I care as much.
I love every single interaction with that character in the show, and I am always paying attention to her because she's interesting to me. So maybe I just pay more attention to her than the average person. I don't know. But
yeah. Well, what's going to be cool is because we got this thing with her or it or whatever, we are going to probably get a backstory on this character finally. So
that could be interesting.
Yeah. Cause I like, is this a race? Is this just like a C-3PO on their ship? I mean, what are we talking? What is this thing? So, it's very, very, at least you wonder.
Is she fully functional? That's what I want to know.
Yeah, of course you do, Dave.
Dave!
What? Data was?
I'm going to start calling you Duncan.
So one of the first things that Data lets us know. He's fully functional.
Well, anyways, so when Stamets trying to get the shuttle out, the power fails, and the shuttle's falling back into the hole, the time hole. And then we get back to the Section 31 ship, and Giorgio stops Burnham and basically saying, you can't leave Spock with them. The memory extractor will just destroy his mind. And so she
sabotages the cameras so they can have this conversation.
Right. And says, we're going to have a fight and you're going to try to knock me out kind of thing. And so they stage a fight and, it was pretty fun. Right.
There's your thing. Well, yeah. Michelle Yeoh is great. She's amazing. And I love everything about her. She's like, I'm going to make him look bad so I can look good. I'm like, well, if you're getting beat up, doesn't that make you look bad?
What I didn't understand was how Michael liberating Spock was good for Michael. And she says that. She's like, looks good on you, looks bad on him, win-win. And I didn't understand how that would look good for Michael.
Yeah, I'm not sure either.
Yeah, because, no matter what, I guess the presumption is that Michael will take Spock away from Section 31 and return him to the proper authorities, I think is the idea.
But isn't Section... We know so little about this incarnation of Section 31 because it flies in the face of everything we know about Section 31. It seems like they should be the proper ones to have Spock, sort of. I don't know. Like, it's very...
Except that, I would think that... Well, we all know that Cornwell's involved with this particular ship, so...
Yeah, exactly.
It's not like she can turn Spock over to Cornwell, because that's not going to turn out well.
Yeah, it's so muddled, because before they were a top secret organization, and now they're a public, openly known organization, and that doesn't make a lot of sense. So we're trying to like refigure out what's going on with Section 31, and they're not really telling us. I don't understand.
When we're dealing with Sloan, it's like... Sisko had no idea what Sloan was talking about or who Sloan was, right? Yeah. Section 31 was completely dark. But Cornwell's just like hanging out on a Section 31 ship, which, by the way, I need the model of. I'm just saying. Because I love that ship. That's a really pretty ship. Anyway, but you're right. I don't know where that's – I think the win-win was just you get your brother back. I think that's the only win I can think of.
It didn't make any sense.
I just wish I understood how Section 31, like how they fit within Starfleet. Do they supersede everything Starfleet? Or do they work in conjunction with Starfleet? Like, we don't... Right. It seems like they sort of work in conjunction, but we don't really... They haven't explicitly said.
I mean, I don't know.
They're spooks. That's what it is.
They were more spooky in Deep Space Nine, which is why I love them.
Oh yeah, no, they're very good.
They're not spooky here. They're just kind of there here. I'm like, they're like cowboys. They just whip out their badge. Like, I'm the sheriff in this part.
Yeah.
I had read a headcanon on Reddit about this that I thought was actually pretty cool. In r/Daystrom Institute, that was talking a little bit about the fact that maybe what will happen is that we will get an inversion on Section 31 as part of the stalemate with the Klingon War. Now that the Klingons have gone and straightened up and flown right. Once the Cold War ends, then as part of the deal that they broker with the Klingons, Section 31 has to be dissolved, which, of course, then it isn't really dissolved, but the Federation will pretend that they dissolved it.
Mm.
And so that explains why post-Star Trek VI, Section 31 just doesn't exist anymore, or at least we don't hear from it. And then when it shows up again in Deep Space Nine,
100 years later.
It shows up, 100 years later, everybody's like, Section what? You know, because...
That makes sense.
It was part of that. That makes I like that headcanon. I'm like, I'll accept that headcanon.
I mean, it's the most likely, but that still doesn't answer how they work with Starfleet in this day and age. Like, we don't know how their affiliation works, and hopefully the Section 31 show will tell us about how that is.
They're like black ops for Starfleet.
Well, and you know what was actually more interesting was hearing Cornwell actually say Article 14, Section 31, which was kind of cool, because canonized, whatever you want to say.
don't they bring that up in Enterprise with Section 31? They bring like a they talk about that like reboot. Don't they talk about that, Dave? Didn't we go into that at some point?
Section 31 exists prior to it being called Section 31 because Reed's part of Section 31, but
they're trying to recruit him or something. I don't know.
Yeah, they're trying to recruit Archer into Section 31. Although they didn't say what they were called in Enterprise because the Federation hadn't been formed, and therefore there's no Article 14 in Section 31. But this organization exists. They insert themselves into this Federation charter so they can be legal once the Federation is formed, but they're not specifically called Section 31. Although we all know they're Section 31 because that's or what Section 31 evolved from, just because of they all wear black and they're covert and stuff like that. Nobody knows about them like a covert operation is supposed to be.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like, because Reed, I mean, it just totally changes what Reed is. Like, if you go back and rewatch Enterprise, it's like everything, he's like, is he doing this for Section 31? Like, what is his motive? You know, because he's been part of them or, you know, covertly part of them for a long time or tried to get away but didn't. You know, it's interesting. Makes his character a lot more interesting looking back at older episodes.
Guy, did you ever read in the Franz Joseph Technical Manual, the Articles of Federation in Article 14?
I didn't look it up. You want me to go look it up real quick?
No, I have it right in front of me.
Oh, okay.
Do you want me to read it?
Yes, please.
It says, Article 14, subject to the provisions of Article 12, the Supreme Assembly may recommend measures for the peaceful adjustment of any situation, regardless of origin, which it deems likely to impair the general welfare or friendly relations among planets, including situations resulting from violations of the provisions of these articles of the Federation, setting forth the purpose and principles of the United Federation of Planets. So it's obviously vague, but it sounds
like that's what it's referring to.
It's like
it's Article 14 of the Franz Joseph Manual.
If you got to fudge it, you got to fudge it, you know,
because that's exactly what they were talking about. Was Article 14 is the one where it says, hey, just so you all know, we can suspend anything if we need to in case of a war. Article 14 says.
Pete Herr, last episode, was talking about Abraham Lincoln, you know, suspended a habeas corpus during Civil War. So, you know, it makes sense.
I just think it's kind of sweet that it comes straight out of the Franz Joseph Technical Manual.
I don't know if they're pulling from that, but I'd love to find out if anybody has any more thoughts on that. I figured you, Guy, of all people, would have a little more insight than me. So, I know it's your thing.
My wheelhouse.
Yeah, sir.
I remember discussing this back in the 90s when Divergence, and that's why I was so excited about this, was because I know that when Divergence and Inquisition came out, which were the two episodes in DS9 that specifically were 31 in specifics, they were talking about it being part of the Articles of the Federation and Section 31. I think we all sort of said it was Article 14 that they were referring to.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so we were talking about the Franz Joseph Technical Manual.
Right.
Being Article 14.
Because there wasn't much out at that time other than a few other TNG stuff that came out.
Right, right. So I'm now looking through Memory Alpha to see if Memory Alpha has something on it.
Yeah, it really is very vague, if anything. So maybe Memory Beta, since Franz Joseph is not considered official canon.
Right, right.
Anyways.
So...
Just a thought. I mean, Section 31. I don't know.
I remember that, like, on the nets and stuff like that, we were talking a lot that it was Article 14 that they were talking about from the manual. Because that's the only place where we had the Articles of the Federation.
Sure. Yeah.
So, I mean, it was like, I don't know. Because, I mean, now you look and we've got the Articles of the Federation are rewritten in the new book Federation, you know, and so and they're completely different, but 14's the same.
Is it really? 14 says the same, basically the same idea.
But it's basically the same thing. It's got to, otherwise it won't fit Section 31.
Gotcha. Understood. Right. Yeah. Well, cool stuff. We'll just jump ahead just real quick so that Burnham throws Spock on her shuttlecraft and they steal the shuttlecraft and get out of there. So, Dave, even on a Section 31 ship, you can steal your shuttlecraft.
Shuttlecrafts can always be stolen. There's no locks on anything. What the hell, guys?
Was that hers, though?
Yeah,
as I say, I don't think that it was technically stolen. No, she didn't steal away.
But the fact that you can launch a shuttlecraft off a ship without any authorization from anywhere, you can just take it. Like, it's like the keys. I don't know.
The keys are always in the ignition.
I mean, I would love to ask, like, a Navy pilot if you could just steal a plane, like an F-14 off.
Well, I mean, if you think about it,
the amount of effort to get an airplane off the deck of a carrier is insane.
I know. I'm just saying, like, could you do that? And they'd probably be like, no fucking way.
I mean, she was told to leave. So, I mean.
Maybe Giorgio set something up. But still, in all of Star Trek's shuttles can just leave whenever they want to. Children can take out shuttlecrafts whenever they want to.
Oh, I know your quarrel about it. I just think that, I don't know. This time she was, you know, they were expecting her to leave. So, I don't think it was.
Well, and I guess to be fair, if you think about it, you know, it's not really like an F-14 on the deck of an aircraft carrier. It's more like the company cars being parked in the parking lot. I think this is a little bit more advanced in technology. We've gotten to the point where you're really stealing a company van.
Yeah, you're catapulting a 20-ton jet off a deck, yeah.
Which requires a crew of 12 to just get the plane ready.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
So, I mean, there's a little bit of a difference there.
And jumping to another shuttlecraft, obviously Stamets and Pike and Tyler are stuck on there, and they don't look like they have too much longer because they're going to fall into the aperture. And Sru wants to transport him out, but he can't get a lock. And that's when Pike says, Stamets, use your tardigrade brain to figure out where we are. And, calculate the coordinates.
That was very Shatner of you.
I was doing a Shatner thing, and remotely send him to Stam or to Saru, and which he does, and they get the lock on him, and they're going to beam up, and just before Pike hits the shuttle, self destruct, and so they beam out, and the shuttle explodes, taking
seconds to spare, no less.
Yes,
the squid with them.
Taking Squidward with them down.
Squidward!
And like we said, Arium, she gets kind of taken over by this, you know, whatever
the
weird
AI
force.
Or whatever.
Right.
Squidward.
Yeah, so anyway, so that's they get out of there, and then back on the bridge, Pike and Tyler have like a kiss and make up moment, which is just kind of gross.
All the smooching is kind of gross.
I really didn't like it.
Did you have to use your tongue, Tyler? Yeah, he did. Yeah. He hasn't got any from Michael.
I felt that it was noble of Pike to admit that he was being prejudiced, and
I agree. Actually,
I thought it was good.
I did not. I was like, I'd be pike.
Because you
be
hate
like,
Tyler.
I know. Tyler, go to the airlock and open it, will you?
Let yourself out, please.
Here's the thing about Pike that I'm really enjoying as far as character goes. He is, and he established this right off in the beginning when he said, there's my F in astrophysics. He is totally willing to admit a mistake. And he's trying to establish, and they've been trying to establish this from the beginning, that he's the kind of captain that, unlike every other captain that we've ever had in Starfleet, he's the kind of captain who goes, you know what? I think I don't know what I'm doing right now. Help me out, guys. Right. And they've been trying really hard to kind of put that forward and put him as being very human. And so, you know, despite the fact that you don't like the fact that he's backing down to Tyler, I do agree with Holly. I like the fact that he was willing to go, hey, okay, maybe I was wrong.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because that seems like that fits his character. He's very big on, hey, I'm screwed up here. Somebody else get in here and help me out.
Yeah,
he's big on that.
I like the character of Captain Pike. So I agree with you and Holly, but I also agree with Aaron because it's kind of fun to shit on Tyler. So he's taking the wind out of my sails whenever he's being nice to Tyler. So it's like I appreciate Pike for being awesome, but it's like, oh, come on. Keep shitting on Tyler. You're shitting on Tyler. Lines are great.
Well, anyways, so it is, I guess. But so we get that. And then Michael is hiding from Leland in the Section 31 ships. And she's like basically doing a, I guess, a Millennium Falcon thing on an asteroid. Hiding out, and they pass on, you know, not finding them. And this is where Burnham realizes, because he's dyslexic, he's reversing the number order.
I think she actually mentioned it when she was alone somewhere.
Yeah, she did. Yeah, she
that like, it was a mirror. She's like, what are you seeing? And then was it in this scene?
Yeah. Oh. Well, yeah, well, no, it wasn't this scene, but
yeah, no, it was, because she talks about the looking glass. She recites, okay, yeah, mm-hmm. She recites Alice in Wonderland back to him, and mm-hmm. She's like, what are you seeing in the looking glass? And then she's like, oh my God, it's backwards. Okay, yeah, you're right. It's the scene.
Exactly. So,
pardon my interruption.
No, it's cool. And then when she punches in those coordinates, when they ask the computer to search for it, it is Talos 4. So
and there's no warning sign that says you can't go there on the computer screen, which I thought was strange.
Yeah,
it should be.
Yeah, exactly.
No fly zone.
For those of us who are uneducated on Talos, what, 5, 4?
Four.
Two, four. Three? Mm-hmm. Four.
4, 3, 2, 1.
Why don't you tell me why there should be a no fly?
It's got the only death penalty in the Federation.
So Talos 4 is filled with these people with immense telepathic abilities.
Brains!
They can make you see anything.
Right.
So you don't know what's real and what's not.
Right.
And so if you watch the Cage, the first original series episode, it's the pilot before they made Captain Kirk. Pike was in charge, and you'll see that whole story. Or you could watch where the Menagerie Part 1 and 2, where Spock steals the Enterprise from Kirk and to rescue or help Christopher Pike. So either one, you could interchangeable, but you get if you watch it, if you'd get the whole lowdown on Talos 4. So
we're taking place. This episode is going to take place only a few years. Because that was 2254. So this would be 2257. So this is only taking place like 3 years after 24, 5, 6, 7. Yeah, 3 years. I had to do the math because apparently I can't math.
It's the age guy.
It's okay. I can't math either. It's fine.
Well, you know, and that would be how we would end up dying on Discovery. because the power of math is what
this is the power of
Discovery.
Math, people.
Right.
Oh, I didn't carry the 5.
So, Holly and I, we just die. And
right.
All hail the power of math. We'll do 3 hail algebras.
How's that?
Anyway, so this takes place in 2257. So we're only 3 years from that moment. We're not far from that.
Yeah.
So. you know, we're not far down the road from Pike's little adventure on Talos IV. Which does explain, though, why Spock wants to go back there, or at least is implying to go back there.
They can read his mind for everyone.
Just so that everybody can understand what he's saying. But here's another thing that's interesting. So I noticed you kind of chuckled about his dyslexia. So I was thinking about this. First of all, I'll give a little backstory here. I, too, had dyslexia when I was a kid.
Me, too.
And
me also.
I put the sexy in dyslexia. Anyway.
Did you? I put the rexia.
Yeah, exactly. But my way of getting over dyslexia was to literally put all of my reading power into my visual memory, my visual center of my brain.
Yeah.
Which means that I have this one stupid human trick that I can do now, which is I can read any direction, including upside down in a mirror. Yeah. And I can read just as fast upside down in a mirror as I can read right side up forward. You know, and it makes my stepmom, she loves that. She thinks that's the funniest thing she's ever seen because she works with children who have autistic disorder, autistic spectrum kids. That's what she does for a living. And so she's like, I can't believe that's what your brain decided to do to fix dyslexia.
It's funny. It's
really cool.
I can do something similar to that, too. And my kids think it's hilarious that I can read like that.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny. And my only way is, I think it's similar to yours, is I really had to take a lot of years and force myself to focus on the letters and everything. So
And I think that's because you and I are from roughly the same era when they were like, dyslexia, that's not a thing. You two just need to learn to read. Stop being slackers.
Yeah, you fucking you fucking idiots.
Yeah, exactly. It was, you know, we were just obviously idiots instead of.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say instead of just. So we were forced to come up with an alternate pathway.
Some way to cope with it.
Yeah, some way to cope with it, which. You know, I keep wondering how much more of my visual cortex could I have used for something else?
True. Absolutely.
You know, instead of how much of my visual cortex is used to take snapshots of words, you know, which is what really it's using right now. But I have to admit that said, I kind of am happy that Spock joined me. You know what I mean? In a way, I'm kind of like, hey, Spock, a lot of the things Spock does strangely make some sense. Like, you know, like all of the things that the character Spock does, I'm like, oh yeah, because I do that too. Like the remembering so many weird things, you know, classes of starships and all the things that I do that are just like freakish and strange that people are like, why do you know that stuff? And I'm like, I don't know. Shut up.
I know. I mean, but isn't like a Spock like the hallmark of every kid who didn't have it right?
Right.
with the rest hallmark of society.
Of geeks, right?
Yeah, it was like, you know, it's like he just was unusual in every aspect. And I think that's why people loved him for years and years and years. It's this betrayal. Someone's like, that is me because I do not fit in like everyone else.
Right.
Right. And so, I mean, in some ways, I was kind of glad to find out that he was dyslexic. You know, I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. And in a way, I totally could see making a code where I would reverse the numbers just because I can. I totally could reverse words and reverse numbers and do it just because I don't necessarily, you know, maybe I don't want you to figure out what I'm after.
Right.
You know, maybe I don't want you to be, maybe I don't want it to be easy. You know,
did you, just a quick question, Guy, when you were younger trying to read, this is my experience. I always felt like the letters were literally dancing on the page.
Yeah. That's kind of like an Erlen's problem, but yeah, there's a disorder for that too. I didn't have that problem. Uh-huh. They just didn't make sense. the right. words kept going backwards. I kept reading from the wrong direction, which, by the way, made Japanese really easy for me to read.
To learn.
Because the fact that, yeah, it's all ideograms. And so it was so easy for me to pick up Japanese.
Yeah, like, and this word means, you know, bathroom, this room.
Right, exactly.
Doesn't change. Image. Well, they but they have the two different writings. They have like a script writing and then the actual, like you said,
Yeah, they have their two phonetic languages, and then they have their phonetic alphabets, and then they have their ideographic alphabet they inherited from Chinese. But they also read from top to bottom and right to left instead of left to right. Or they might just go the other direction to conform to us just because 1945. So, so it's like you could get documents that were going either direction.
Gotcha.
And that was like really hard for everybody, but not hard for me at all. Because I can read that direction. Sure. It doesn't matter to me. I just needed to cue in where you wanted me to start reading.
Right.
So, yeah. It's cool. It was kind of cool interesting.
Anything else that you want to talk about this episode, Guy, since we're at the end of it?
No, there's all kinds of stuff to talk about this episode. This episode is packed full of cool stuff.
Did you like this episode?
So this episode, the two episodes that have the word light in it, I felt like this is suffering from the AB problem that we're having with Star Trek. And I don't know if I'm getting spoiled by Orville, and I think I might be. But I feel like we're getting unnecessary B plots.
Yeah.
You know, it's like almost like, oh, we've got to put a B plot in this. So, how about a time vortex? Yeah, that sounds good. And, we'll get Pike and Tyler. We'll stick them in a shuttle and then throw, because we can't just stay with Spock and Burnham.
Right.
We have to break it up somehow. And I was just thinking about this, and I'm like, I don't know if maybe I'm getting spoiled by Orville, because when you have like a happy refrain of the episode Orville, a happy refrain, and you compare that to Data's Day, and you look at them because they're roughly the same plot, but of course Data's Day had an A-B plot where it had a secondary plot that they were running through and all this stuff, and you feel like Data's Day didn't flesh out the relationship between the two characters like a happy refrain managed to, because a happy refrain just stayed with the A plot and just hammered it down. And it was such a rich episode. And now I'm sitting here going, gosh, wouldn't it have been nice if Discovery had just stayed on Vulcan and just stayed there?
Yeah,
and
didn't
have to go back and mess with Pike. I mean, it's not like the episode pieces with Pike and, I mean, despite your feelings of Tyler.
Sure.
I mean, it was good development for Pike. I don't think we got a whole lot out of Tyler, but we got some good development out of Pike. But and of course, the obvious evolution that we're going to get out of Arium. But for the most part, I kind of felt like we had sort of like everybody's on contract for all the actors on Discovery's Bridge. So why don't we just make a B plot and throw that in here?
I
don't know. Do you feel that way?
I don't know. I mean, other than probably what's going to happen with Arium in the future, I guess we'll see what happens with her. Obviously that'll play into the future, but it seemed kind of pointless unless there's something more that comes later on in the story.
Well, we're obviously setting that up.
I mean, I'm hoping it's temporal Cold War, because they've always been associated, the Red Angel as being this thing of good, and now they're at the end, Pike is questioning it because Section 31 has been saying, well, maybe the Red Angel isn't good. But it would make more sense as if there's two sides, and like the Red Angels somehow tied into the good side of the temporal Cold War, and the modified probe that's come back to kill them as part and figure out some information as part of the bad side of the temporal Cold War. I'd love for them to pick that up and flesh that out, since we never got a appropriate ending for it in Enterprise.
That's true.
Right.
Are you a good angel or are you a bad angel?
Oh, and, yeah. and then the thing is, I mean, this show has been pretty big at referencing Enterprise.
It has. You're right. Yeah.
Especially in season one, and not maybe not as much in season two, but like they definitely call out like Enterprise canon because it's really the only canon they can call on. So, I mean, it would make sense if they start bringing more Enterprise canon into this. And I'd love for that to be the case, but I definitely think Holly is right. I'm pretty sure the Red Angel's got to be Michael because there's no one else is logical unless it's some surprise character. But I think
wanted to say something, but go ahead, finish.
Oh, I was just going to say, I'm pretty sure the Red Angel is going to be Michael. Like last week, I wasn't prepared, but I've talked with the people this week just on Facebook and whatnot. And I would say it's either Spock or Michael. I really hope it's not Spock. And I don't really want it to be Michael either, but I think it's most logical for it to be Michael, for her involvement with Saru to go back and help his people. So everything is very motivated. It's very Michael motivated, it seems like. So all the things it's doing make sense in that light. Mm-hmm. So and it also keeps Michael the center of the show because it's the Michael Burnham show and not really Star Trek Discovery. So who knows? But that's kind of my thought on the Red Angel, and I'm hoping we get some temporal Cold War stuff happening.
What are you thinking, Holly?
Well, so Guy, I don't know if I think it was two or three episodes ago, Pike was looking at the drawings from Spock's, for lack of a better word, diary. Right. And I have been comparing all of the depictions of the Red Angel to the episodes and trying to figure out which angel goes with which anomaly and all that crap. And I know, if you look at them, it looks like the very end, the Red Angel's going to die. There's a drawing of the angel face down and something big is happening. But I feel like the upgraded tech may be a little bit of foreshadowing for Arium. Maybe she becomes the angel because the tech is so advanced, but it's this exoskeleton kind of suit. This was the first time that I was like, oh, maybe it's not Michael. So I don't know. That's the only thing I was thinking with that when you were talking, Dave, because I don't know. I can't figure out, you know, what these last three images of these angels are telling. Like, what are they telling us? So I need to see this episode at least one more time to really
pull that through. That's an interesting thought. I never even considered that. I like that theory.
I mean, I think it'd be fun if it was Arium, but it's not the Arium show. It's a Michael Burnham show. So because Star Trek Discovery doesn't really do anything that's too surprising, the Arium thing would be too surprising, I think, for it to be real. I mean, it would be cool if I was wrong and they do surprise me. I'd love that to happen. But yeah. This show is so Michael-centric, the Red Angel almost has to be Michael because the show is so Michael-centric. Well,
let me throw something out there because I had thought, what if it's Kraft?
What's Kraft?
The guy who got caught up in that sex ring?
Yes. Yeah. That was totally him.
Yeah.
Yeah, from the Patriots?
Yeah, the Patriots guy.
Yes, the Patriots
That's
guy.
That's what I thought you were talking about.
No, from the Short Treks.
Oh, the Calypso dude?
Yeah, Calypso.
Oh.
And I'm not sure how it fits or why, but we know that that's 1,000 years in the future.
Mm.
We know that we've got a time travel of some sort going on here. And, you know, that kind of, you know what I mean? I'm kind of, that's sort of what I don't know how that fits in, but I'm wondering if it has something to do with the Short Treks.
I hope not. I mean, I do and I don't. I'd like
you're like, I really don't want it to be that.
He hated all of the Short Treks.
Pretty
except
much.
Except for Harry Mudd's.
Mudd's was fun.
No, the only thing I was going to say is the Red Angel, definitely when I got a look at from what Saru saw, those look like childbearing hips. So I'm going to say it looked like
definitely
a female.
Female. Definitely.
I thought it was female too, but I do know that if you've got a guy who's in really good shape, he could definitely have pretty serious hips.
Now, I don't know, like I'm not banking so much on the images in Spock's little diary, but I can send you I sent you a black and white one, but in the colored one, it looks like it has very flowing hair in a few of the
images.
Yeah.
Well,
interesting.
I hope and don't hope it's the short tracks. I kind of hope it's not the short tracks because the theory I've been reading about is that they think maybe it's the AI from the Discovery that became advanced and went back in time. And I don't really like that idea.
Well, that would be Arium, right?
No, Arium's not the Discovery AI. It's the computer. I mean, it's two separate things.
I guess the computer.
I think it's Tilly.
It's Tilly.
Oh, it would be fun if it was Tilly.
I think it's Tilly. I got this feeling it's Tilly.
Specific questions. Yeah. How do I connect Bluetooth?
<Uh-oh>. Okay,
somebody's
AI.
Somebody's triggering.
My Alexa responds to a computer, so.
Yeah, so does mine.
Oh, cool.
We have to not say the C word around this household.
Nice.
Yeah, but you know, and I hope it do. So I hope it does. So they tie in, but I hope it doesn't because I really didn't like the idea of it.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm torn. I'm betting on Michael.
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was just gonna toss it to Aaron and get his thoughts on the episode.
Oh, got you.
It was a fun episode. I think Guy's a little right. The shuttle with Tyler and Ash was – I mean, sorry, Pike and Ash was a little like, meh, you know. I'm interested to see where that probe comes from and if that means anything. It 500 years in the future, so that's kind of well outside the range of any Star Trek that we know.
It could be the typical Cold War time, though. It could be. I can't remember exactly where they came from.
Yeah, and that episode is Point of Light, by the way, for those of you who are wondering what I'm referring to. The other one that feels like it's all screwed up and A-B plot is Point of Light, episode 3. That's the one where we get to Laurel and have the baby and all that stuff.
Right. Gotcha. What was I going to say? But, I mean, a couple of things that just, you know, Sarek almost crying. I'm like, I'm sorry. This is Sarek we're talking about. If you watch any Sarek from the original series and onto the movies, and I mean, besides when he gets the disease where he starts getting the emotional breakdowns, Sarek was not an emotional guy. So.
Isn't there like a, with Vulcans, they are either emotionless or heavy in emotion?
They do have emotion, but they've used logic to suppress their emotion.
Right. So
him getting choked up over Spock and Michael getting all fucked up because of, I just was kind of like, it just doesn't, I don't know. I just have a hard time with it.
I have
a hard time that these new writers are just having an issue with writing for Vulcans. It really frustrates me. Mm-hmm. I don't understand what is like, because he gets a little choked up. You're like, oh, he really cares about his kids. Like, that's not what we saw of Sarek before. It's not how he operates. I don't know. It just frustrates me.
Early onset Bendai syndrome. We saw Picard sobbing and crying. Sarek had these feelings. Maybe he's got some early signs of Bendai syndrome.
I know. I don't know. It just doesn't make a lot of sense. Yeah, I don't know. It was a fun episode. I kind of felt it was sort of like the in-between episodes, like nothing huge happens, except they find Spock.
I don't know. Mm-hmm. I think this is probably one of my favorite episodes of the season. It's very Star Trek-y. I mean, I think this is probably my favorite. It's felt very Star Trek-y. I thought the A and B plot were both solid. You got the Michael finding Spock and digging at her parents, and you got the shuttlecraft story where people get stranded and have to become friends. It's very, very Star Trek. All these things are very common tropes in Star Trek, which is, it was like, it's nice when it starts to feel Star Trek. And then, you know, we got this Talos 4 we're going to go see next week, which is going to be a lot of fun. So, I mean, this episode did have a lot of setup, but I just loved the trekkiness of this episode and how it wasn't bogged down with a ton of melodrama and like some of the previous episodes have been. So I've been really digging this one, and I'm excited to see where we're heading next week with Talosia.
It's so funny because I kind of like feel the complete opposite. Like, I feel like the plots were kind of like obviously working us towards something, but when you're watching it, it felt disjointed. Like, you were so focused on what was happening and then all of a sudden ripped away to something completely different.
Yeah.
And the experience for me, the experience was like, oh God, we're back at this plot. Okay.
It's like cold, hot.
Yeah, hot, you know? Yeah. Exactly.
For me, the editing issues I had with the episode were like when Michael gets home at first and like the lines keep repeating. I thought my CBS All Access was spazzing out. Because everything kept getting mirrored. You hear the same line over and over and over again. I'm like, why are they doing this? That's like literally
foreshadowing.
That's my only complaint about the episode. Really, is like a really weird editing choice there.
Yeah. I real quickly just want to make for the record that the anthropologists that head back in time are from 2769, which would be 500 years in the future.
Oh.
So the cold front temporal anthropologists are in fact from 2769. So it would be exactly 500 years in the future. So
maybe you're right, Dave.
Yeah, I think Dave, you might be onto something. These might be related to temporal cold
war. I really hope so, because temporal cold war makes the most sense if they're dealing with factions from the future. It never got resolved in Enterprise, so bring it into Discovery, introduce it in this season, and then dive hard into it next season. It would be great.
Yeah.
I would love to see a resolution to that. Please, CBS.
Hey, CBS, if you're listening.
I was about to say, do they ever work?
No.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah.
Does that ever work?
No, they never listen.
Oh, math. Almighty.
Almighty math.
Almighty
math.
Can
I do three Hale algebras and two... and two, geometry maths just to... get this. I mean, what do I need to get the more temporal cold war maths?
Oh, God. Unfortunately, I think all these shows have been written and produced pretty much. So you're gonna get what they get.
Yeah, I know.
You know? And you don't throw a fit.
Yeah, that's right.
I'll throw a fit anyway.
We're already rolled off on this one.
Right. Well, anything else we want to talk about for this episode? I mean, it's not a bad episode. I just
think it's one of the – I mean, the thing about Discovery that I'm enjoying is even when they're not hitting on all cylinders, it's still better by – you know, and in general, I still feel like the Discovery episodes are far better than, say, you know, If Wishes Were Horses from Deep Space Nine or The Naked Now. You know what I mean? There's like a whole bunch of – real nasty episodes that I can bring up at any point in time here from any one of the original series set. Mm-hmm. And I still feel like Discovery is still doing better than those. So even the quote unquote bad episodes where I'm not that happy with them are still much better than the average lousy episode from the originals. So
like, I definitely agree with that sentiment completely, Guy. This season is really weird, though, because it's like we'll get a setup episode, then we'll get one or two episodes of stuff happening, then we'll get another setup episode, a couple episodes of stuff happening, then we'll get another setup episode, and that was tonight's episode, another setup episode. Like, I feel like – but this was like one of my favorite of the setup episodes. It's weird. Like the show is like it's stop start because it's been one all big story. But it seems like every so often they stop and need to like set up for more story instead of just getting to the story.
And it doesn't help them any at all that they were up against Identity 1 and 2 with the Orville, which was such an incredible two-parter that it's hard, if you're watching them back-to-back, like I was, you're sitting there going, oh my God, this is such an incredible episode of Orville. And then you go over to Discovery and you're like, well, this is an okay episode of Discovery.
Yeah. Right,
you know, right. And you're like, damn it.
You know, I've only seen the first episode of season two of Orville. I've not followed it.
Oh yeah, man.
I'm way behind on Orville.
You've got to be going through that one and two of Identity 1 and 2 is a great two-parter. They did their best of both worlds. That's their best of both worlds. They're totally leveling up. Huh. So that's fine. But imagine being any show up against Best of Both Worlds 1 and 2. I mean, it's just ridiculous. And that's where Orville was this last 2 weeks, is Best of Both Worlds 1 and 2. And so any episode against that is going to look a little dimmer, a little bit less shiny. And it has nothing to do with the quality of Discovery's episode. It has everything to do with the fact that Orville just pulled out their Best of Both Worlds 1 and 2.
Right.
Yeah, gotcha.
And so, you know, all of a sudden you're like, whoa, oh my God. I mean, they're just changing their entire aspect of Orville right there. I mean, so that was brutal and it was a rough one and it was really awesome and the dynamics changed. And then you go back to Discovery, which is doing a setup episode, like David said, and you're like, okay, that's great.
I'm scratching my head. There's only 15 or 14 episodes of the season of Discovery, and like I've been enjoying them for the most part. They've been solid episodes, more solid than season one for sure. But I don't understand the stopping and starting. It just like it's like a person learning how to drive a stick shift.
I think what they're trying to do is isolate a little bit better. I think it seems like season two is much more responsive. Like they're responding to the fans' backlash, which really kind of saddens me a little because I almost was like, let the fans whine. They're going to whine. We did. I'm old enough, like we said at the beginning of this podcast, I was 14 when Next Gen came out. So it's not like it was in my distant past. I remember it clearly. I remember sitting on the couch. I can remember turning on the TV and hitting record on the VCR. I think I still have the VHS tape somewhere in a box of the first recording of Encounter at Farpoint. So I've been here long enough. I hated Next Gen. I really did. It was nothing like TOS, and I didn't like it at all. And it took me time before I started to warm up to Next Gen. Then I hated Deep Space Nine because it was Babylon 5 clone, and I hated it. And then I hated Voyager because it was Battlestar Galactica clone. And then I hated Enterprise because they screwed up canon. And now I love all of them, right? But it took me time, and I had to really... And so I have changed my attitude with Discovery, and I had to, you know, because now I'm like, you know, all I really ended up doing was wasting 2 seasons of each one of these shows whining, and that's all I really did. But I also know that we Trekkies, we're going to whine. That's what we do.
That's true.
And I've been whining since 1987. I mean, I haven't stopped whining. I know that we're going to whine because I was there, right?
Yeah.
So I don't like it when Discovery gives in because I'm like, you know, it was Star Trek Hilton, and I know that. And I know we didn't like Star Trek Hilton. And I still am not very fond of the Enterprise D. It's still not my favorite ship. It's still ugly, in my slight opinion. No offense, Andrew Probert. You know? But... I got over it, and so will everybody else.
Right.
I like the course correcting they did in Discovery. They're bringing things back in line with how it always should have been in season one, so I don't mind that, honestly.
But I also feel like some of them aren't necessarily so good. Some of them are, and some of them aren't. I don't know if I'm hot on the fact that I think that they took the, I don't understand all of season one because it's all one big happy story. And so I feel like that their course correction on season two is what you're complaining about now, which is it feels like there's these islands. I mean, when you...
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. I would rather them stay as a giant story. It makes it feel less start-stoppy. But I mean, like the small things like Klingons and the D7 and stuff like that, they're fixing the stuff that shouldn't have been messed up in the first place.
Right. Like New Eden is pretty much all by its lonesome self.
Yeah.
I mean, it's all by itself. It's just its own little episode. Then Point of Light doesn't even make sense. It's a setup episode for episode four. Right.
And, and stuff that hasn't happened yet.
Right, and stuff that hasn't even occurred yet. An obol for Charon is again all by its lonesome self, right? And then you know what I mean? It's like they're trying to make these isolated islands in there all by itself. Then you end up with Saints of Imperfection, which is a setup for Sounds of Thunder, and then then Lights of Shadow is referring back to Brother, and you've got like, okay, you know, it's feeling like they're overcorrecting to me.
Yeah.
I feel like they're kind of going the other direction.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I wish they had just said, okay, you know what? You guys can jump off a cliff if you don't like the interconnected story. That's fine.
Yeah. I mean, just
deep breath, guys.
Yeah, canon stuff I'm glad they fixed. The interconnected story, they could have left it more interconnected and less islandy, for sure. But yeah. Nothing's perfect, and maybe they'll course correct and get it just right season three.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah, and actually, I mean, you know, like I said, I don't mind the fact that the Klingons are wearing hair now. That's kind of cool. Hairy Klingons are cool. Even though I do think Laurel got like a head shrinking going on. She went to see a psychiatrist.
Yeah, she definitely did.
She got a shrink.
Big. Yeah. Well,
she totally got shrunk.
Well, that's why I complained about the Klingons so bad when we first leaked the pictures, because like, they don't even look like Klingons. They look like some other kind of alien race because their heads are cone heads.
Right.
Yeah.
So I was like, I don't even know what you... But that's okay. That's okay. Laurel's still Laurel, and... I still maintain my original argument, which is you're never going to get an Emmy for best art design by making your show look like a 1960s cheap TV show.
No.
So the only way you're going to be able to get people to be on your show, get the best of the best to do Star Trek, is to say, hey, you show me what you think 2257 is going to look like, you know, and then let them go. And you tell me what Klingons will look like in 2257, and you let them go. But
that's not how it was. Brian Fuller's like, redesign the Klingons, make sure they don't have hair.
Right.
It wasn't really a creative decision on the artist. It wasn't the artist's decision. It was the director's decision. He's like, yeah, just do this.
But that's what I'm saying.
George Lucas'd it.
He's coming in with this concept and idea, Brian Fuller is. I'm not talking about Brian Fuller. I'm talking about what Brian Fuller telling other people. I'm talking about people bringing in Brian Fuller. You're not going to bring in Brian Fuller. Brian Fuller wants to make his mark on Star Trek. He's not going to get an Emmy for making it look like 1987. He's not going to get an Emmy for that. So that's why he changes his things. You know, he wants an Emmy. He wants to make a mark.
He left four episodes in before they even started shooting. It doesn't matter.
Well, that's a different story altogether.
What he wants doesn't matter at that point.
His own podcast right there.
Yeah.
Why Brian Fuller had to leave is an entire podcast. But my point is that, you know, then you bring in the people who designed the set and you got the same thing, you know. Because I was talking to somebody online about this. When we get into Picard, it's going to be the same thing. You can't really have him have a ship that was like the Enterprise E, because technically speaking, the Enterprise E is about as technically advanced as my phone. So they're going to have holograms, because hell, Tony Stark had holograms.
Well, I mean, they had holograms early in season one of Next Gen, but then they stopped using them because they're too expensive to do. But they had them, and so like when I watched early Next Gen episodes, I'm like, oh wow, that's cool. They had holograms. That's neat. But then they stopped using because they're just too expensive to do on a TV budget.
But they're going to have them, and people are going to sit there and go, but they didn't have that in TNG.
It's also 20 years later. So it'll be fine.
Sure. But I'm just going to say that, I mean, you know, mark my words now.
Oh, people will complain. The people will always complain. They're going to whine. It's true.
Because Picard's not going to be bald enough or something. There's going to be something.
He's not going to be bald enough.
It's going to happen. I tell you, it's
going to happen. Stewart has more hair than that in real life.
Oh yeah,
he's not really that bald, or he's balder than that.
I think they'll dislike it because he's not technically a Starfleet captain or admiral or anything anymore. He's kind of doing his own thing.
Even though he wasn't really, if you watch All Good Things, that's sort of where he devolved to in that anyway. So
technically
his future was that way, and they're looking at Future Imperfect whenever they talk about that. That's the thing that always gets me too. Whenever I see people in threads talking about this, they whine about him being an admiral in the future, and I'm like, you're talking about Future Imperfect, which was a simulation. I'm like, what kind of trick is are you people?
Right, yeah, yeah.
Just not paying attention to the episode?
No, I mean, why would we?
I mean, All Good Things would be the one that I would actually say is an accurate representation of the future, because Q was at least bouncing them around through technically the future, and he was an ambassador at one point in time. That was what he did. And so this makes some sense that he ends up being an ambassador in the future.
Right. Exactly.
Absolutely.
I just wanted to comment on something that you guys had talked about, was the progression of this season and how it's kind of felt like we'd get an episode that was important and then something that was not so important. And I think we had this discussion a couple weeks ago where we had been getting like essentially an anomaly every episode, but the episodes weren't super exciting and they had that, as Aaron said, like hot and cold feeling because there were different plots throughout each episode. So I don't know. I felt like the, you know, Discovery 2 has been progressing fine, but hasn't always felt like we were getting anywhere. And for some reason, this episode just made me want to like feel like it's a good time to regroup and rewatch all of the previous episodes. And then hopefully next week we get something good and epic, because I don't know. I didn't think it was a great episode, but that's just me.
It wasn't your favorite? You just didn't like it, or?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't bad. I didn't have anything specifically bad about it, but I do feel like I need to watch it at least one more time, but I'll probably watch it two more times. So, I don't know. That's kind of how I felt about the episode as a whole, but, you know, I did want to mention that I love the title sequence, and I appreciate it every week, and I'm curious if there are little hints in it that will tell us where the season will end.
Well, yeah. You do see the Red Angel sprout in her starship-looking wings, so...
Yeah, well, they change it every time.
Yeah, they changed it this episode. I noticed that.
Yeah, they've been changing it little bits here and there.
The opening. I thought about that. I thought some graphic designer's entire job, they come in and go, okay, Joe, your job is to come in here and, okay, what are you going to change this time?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'll figure something out, Bob.
I'll think of something. What do we got?
Think something.
Give me the gist of the episode, pal.
Yeah, what's going on, man?
Yeah. So I always pay attention to it because I'm never sure what it's going to be. So I don't know. Those are just my thoughts on it.
Cool.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So now, Guy, where can we find you?
Oh, okay. Well, now you can find me mostly on my podcast, which is Rocky Mountain Geek Tank, and that's at RockyMountainGeekTank.com. You can also find me on Facebook every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. on Facebook at Rocky Mountain Geek Tank.
And we also,
yeah, we always do
8 p.m. Mountain Time.
That's 8 p.m. Mountain Time. Mm. Which makes it like 10 p.m. Eastern for all of you people who are, you know, obviously really close to Canada, and I just can't visualize that.
Sure.
7
sure.
for me.
7 yeah. for you. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's 7. Yeah, you're the other direction.
Yeah.
I have a little bit easier time visualizing. I've spent more time on the West Coast than the East Coast. But you can also find all my artwork at GS Davis Art, and I pretty much branded myself. So that's Twitter and Facebook, and I've got a web page, and I'm on DeviantArt there and all kinds of stuff. So
nice.
I've done that. So there you go.
Cool stuff.
Cool.
All right. Well, All our music is done by Warp 11. You can find them at warp11.com or Warp 11 on Twitter. Or also our intro is done by Dave Wilkes. The show you can find online at syntholics.com. You can email us at syntholics@yahoo.com. You can join the Facebook group at facebook.com/group/syntholics. You can check out our YouTube channel at youtube.com/syntholics. On Twitter, I'm at David_J_Duncan. The show is at Synthaholic Duo. Aaron's at Blackbird2004. Holly's at Lunar Thistle. And Holly also has a website she'd like to tell you about.
You can find me at hollymichellev.wixsite.com/voiceover.
Cool. And definitely go to Apple iTunes to rate and review our show there. Please give us a nice review and please give us 5 stars. It helps people see the show more. Also, if you can go to our Patreon, patreon.com/synthaholics, throw us a little money our way. That's very nice. If you can do that, helps us keep producing and giving you content. And then, as always, if you can't do those, a great way just to help us out is let people know about the show. Tell your friends and tell your coworkers if they're into Star Trek, if they're into sci-fi, let them know about the Synthaholics podcast. Yeah.
Absolutely.
I like it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Guy, for joining us tonight. It's good talking to you again.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate you letting me be on board.
It was awesome virtually meeting you.
Yeah, it was great virtually meeting you, too.
And we've got the entire Geek Tank coming back for episode 10 of Star Trek Discovery Discussion. So yes. That'll be fun.
Cool. It'll be wild.
It'll be chaos.
You get all of us in here. It's going to be a bizarre thing.
We'll have to be very good and let Aaron do the whole recap before we start talking, because I don't think...
Oh, my God.
We'll just have to be quiet during the recap. So
like, each person will have to hold a conch shell or something before they can talk,
The conch shell of talking, yes. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, thank you all so much for listening. Live long and prosper, one and all. Before the night's over, I'll puke in the sink and we'll cry till we laugh and we'll both shit our pants. You're the best drinking friend I ever had. That was only 2 hours and 4 minutes.
Only.
Woo. Wow.
Sorry, guys.
That's crazy how long that went.
Yeah, they tend to go long.
Yeah, that's nuts. Cool stuff.
Yeah,
thanks, guys. Good talking to you again.
Yeah, I really like being on this show. Thank you so much.
Yeah, man. We'll have to get you back on more often.
Yeah, we need to get you on like a monthly or something.
I really like the fact that, because like Geek Tank, we've got so many people who are so far behind in our viewership that I can't talk about this. It's too spoilery.
Yeah.
So so for Geek Tank, we can't say anything more than today's episode of Discovery is Light and Shadows.
Right.
Yeah.
There you go. That's all you get.
That's all you know.
That's all you get to know. In fact, I'm not even really allowed to bring up all the stuff that about the Picard show that we just talked about. And so, so I really love being on your show because we can get all in depth and I can sit here and talk about all the nitty gritty stuff.
I know, you can get into all the little stuff that, and just hash it out. Sometimes you're just verbalizing your ideas helps you formulate things better.
Well, and I'm sitting there watching and I'm like, Mind Sifter. Oh my God.
That's what it was.
I'm like, oh geez. Oh, I didn't even get to say that in the show, but I had thought about that later. That was one of the things where the Trekkies can validate that probably Giorgio was telling the truth.
Because
if it's a mind sifter, it's not going to do Spock any good.
Right, right.
No.
Right? So, of course, that Burnham doesn't know that it's what a mind sifter is.
Sure.
But if you, as a viewer, are in the know.
Right. We know what a mind sifter is. And so, the fact that it's a mind sifter means that we know that Giorgio is on the level.
Right.
Right. Right. For now, but I still can't fathom what her deal is. So,
well, yeah, she's probably not going to stay on the level because she's Giorgio, and we all know that.
Right.
But
right.
It's still cool.
Yeah, very much
so. That having the Trekkie knowledge gives you an advantage understanding that relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,